it's time for Homegrown on 94.7 WPBC LP Charlottesville with your hosts Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones, Charlottesville's only radio show devoted to local arts. And now, here's Leslie.
Good morning, Christmas morning, and first day of Hanukkah morning, whether you're an art breaker, an art faker, an art maker, or an art partaker. Welcome all, because I don't think I got those all in the right order, did I?
It doesn't matter.
I don't think I got them all in the right order.
Baby, it's Christmas morning. People have been putting toys together until like 3 a.m. You know, they sat and ate the cookies for Santa, had a little glass of wine, and now they're just praying that the children sleep. That's what it is.
You are so Christocentric.
I am.
You are so Christocentric.
That's just been, you know, that was,
you know, there's some experience. People who are sitting there waiting to see if there are going to be any extra special additions to the Chinese food menu.
Right, there
for
are.
For that evening.
Yes, there are. You are absolutely right. I'm actually not really here.
Really?
I'm not. I'm
Wait, we should say that whether you are munching cookies or thinking about fortune cookies.
Right.
Welcome all, because all are welcome to Homegrown, your show about local art.
That's what we should say.
I'm the one that they call Clinton, and I'm here with the first and last Noel, Leslie M. Scott Jones.
Aw, aren't you precious? See, now I want to sing.
Do you?
Well, you know, that's one of my favorite songs.
Is it? I had no idea.
The first Noel, the angels.
See, I didn't know that you're gonna actually, I did know that you're actually gonna sing.
You should know. Come on, it's me.
Of course.
So we should say that this is a pre-recorded show.
Should we say that?
Well,
I've already said it.
So there you go.
Should we break the illusion?
We should. Yeah, like people have any illusion about what's going on in this room.
We should say that we tried to do a live show. We talked to people about doing a live show. Or at least I talked to people about doing a live
show. Yes, that's
and
true.
And universally, the response was, you must be out of your mind.
Right. There was some other expletives in there, I'm sure, but
exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Strangely enough, most people had something that they were going to do this morning.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't
Losers.
Get that. But what could be better than to be here?
Right? With us.
With
but,
us.
But, you know, I'm not actually here.
What?
No.
Where are you?
No, I am a figment of your
diseased imagination.
Dirty imagination.
Okay.
Right now, I am in Florida enjoying 70, possibly 80 degree weather and about to meet Mickey Mouse. That's where I am.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, see, I've never been to Disney World, and apparently, I had no idea, but apparently
really?
It was...
You live in the world, don't you?
I mean, I do, but, you know, but not
well,
Disney's.
Well, I hate to break it to you.
Not Disney's World,
I hate to
apparently.
Break it to you. At this point, our world is pretty much Disney
it's
World.
It's all Disney all the time.
There's very little intellectual property.
That ain't owned by Disney.
Disney hasn't swooped up. So.
No, but, you know, I had never been, and apparently, I didn't know this, but apparently it was very important that I go.
Really?
Yes, it was not necessarily to me, but...
To whom specifically was it important that you go?
My significant other, it's his favorite place on Earth, and when he heard that I had not been, his response was, "Oh my God, you've never been? You have to go, and I have to take you." Okay, calm down. I didn't know it was that important, but okay, all right, we'll go.
It's a little creepy, isn't it?
Well, and you know, the more he talked to me about this particular trip, the more let's see, what's the appropriate term? The more sarcastic I got about it. He's like, oh yeah, you know, people will stand at the door and they'll ask you to like rate your experience at the park, like as you walk out. And of course, my response is, you know what? If somebody walks up to me when I'm trying to leave that place and, you know, I've been there all day and I'm tired and somebody comes up with some Mickey Mouse ears on and wants to ask me a question, they might not get like what they get. You know what I'm saying? Like, it could be Shaniqua just could like come right on out. You know what I'm saying?
Oh no.
Yeah, Shaniqua could just come on out. Yeah, the park was fine, but what is it with this damn mouse everywhere? Everything got ears on it. What is that? And you know, then they would just say, "Okay, well, you can go now."
That would turn it into my happiness place. That certainly would.
Yeah, so, but you
all know, I would need would be popcorn and a seat, and I'd be fine.
But it's going to be interesting. I'm sure I'll have stories to tell you when I get back, because, you know, this is not just me and him going. No, no, no.
Uh-oh.
No, no, no.
Right.
He's spending a week with my family.
For a moment, I was afraid that you were taking Mike Pence with you.
No, 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 no. He doesn't like the mice.
Doesn't he?
No, he doesn't like
I
mice.
Would think that considering that there are no mice on,
that's musical theater. He can't handle it. No.
Mickey and Donald are never allowed to go out on a little date between the two of them.
And can I just tell you?
I would think
you,
that he would enjoy that.
He would be very upset, because think about it. Minnie, she's a slut. She's been with everybody.
What?
She's been with everybody. She was with Mickey. She's been with Goofy. She's been with Goofy.
Minnie has never been with Goofy.
Minnie has been with Goofy. She's a little slut. That's
oh my goodness.
Is. Yes, I'm telling you.
Oh my goodness.
Think about it. Donald had three nephews, in air quotes, never saw a wife, but Minnie always hanging around. I'm just saying. I'm just saying.
You know, you realize, of course, that it's any moment before Disney buys us up.
Well,
you
then,
just ruined that deal now.
Really? Really? How much do you think they were going to pay us? Really? How much do you think we're actually going to get out of that?
I can have my dreams of selling out to the mouse.
All right. I'll let you have your dream, baby. Sorry.
That's my retirement package, baby.
That's your retirement package? Ooh, honey.
Bending over for the mouse.
No.
That's me.
Oh, really? Wow. He may have taken you to dinner first. It could have been, you know, something sweet. It didn't have to be bending over.
Walt's wackiness can do what they want to for the right money. Just...
Wow. All right.
All right. I think it's time we go to our first guest.
I think so, too.
Don't you think so?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
I think that's a good idea to think. So usually when we are graced by the presence of academics,
yes,
they come from Mr. Jefferson's University.
Yes, well,
yeah. But finally we can take Tommy and set him aside, and bring someone from a real school.
Oh, just like the Magi coming from the East.
Yes. That's okay, because it's my alma mater. So,
Go Rams.
Rams. I've been running into a lot of Rams lately. It's been kind of nice, actually.
Yeah, good folks they are.
They are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We've got to throw Leslie a bone every once in a while.
Every once in a while? Only every once in a while?
Uh-oh. Oh, my. Welcome to the show. Dr. Kristen Swenson, how are you, Kristen?
I'm doing great. Thank you. It's really wonderful to be with y'all.
Merry Christmas.
And to you.
And happy first day of Hanukkah.
And to you as well. May there be many gifts. Gifts of joy and beauty and bright
food. You know, I have all these years, I have thought, maybe I'll just convert. Because, you know... Christians only get one day.
Oh.
Jews, they get 12. Like, all those presents. Like, every night they get a new present. Who wouldn't like that?
And that's just Hanukkah. Jews have awesome rituals.
They really do.
Some great holidays. Can I just say food?
Right?
Food.
Everything is centered around food. Yeah. They're kind of
food
like...
Food and guilt, though.
So, basically... Just like all of the African Americans.
Yeah, so, there you go. It's just basically.
It's food and guilt. Yes, that's all it is.
That's what the African American holidays are.
We're here to talk about her book, though. That's what we're here to talk about.
So, Kristen, tell us about this book that you've just written.
So, this new book is a book of creative nonfiction, to use that kind of literary artsy-fartsy language, which is really a way of saying there's a lot of poetry and other people's cool writing, as well as my own meditations on this topic of at the intersection of faith and ecology or environmental issues. The title is God of Earth, Discovering a Radically Ecological Christianity.
I love how compelling that sounds. It sounds like, I mean, I think appropriate to an academic is a title that really begs for unpacking.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah, because I do love to do some unpacking. Though I leave a lot to readers as well. It's a slim book with lots of spaces for people to apply their own imagination.
So tell us, so what is an ecological Christianity?
Well, what I ask in this book, and it comes from a personal place, frankly.
And you are a professor of religious studies, right?
Yes. I am affiliated now with VCU, where I had been for many years and earned tenure. But I have resigned from that position, and I write full-time. But I'm still affiliated with VCU, so it's kind of a complicated relationship. But,
yeah.
It's like you had a divorce. It was amicable.
Everybody's still friends.
Yes, we still get together for the holidays.
Once in a while, you get together. you have a lunch or two. It's cool.
Yeah, it's a good place in lots of ways. But I live now here in Charlottesville, and I write full time. But this book grew out of some of my academic work in religious studies, but also my personal wrestling with the inheritance of Christianity that I have. Born and raised garden variety Lutheran.
Time for our next guest here.
I feel lucky now looking back that it was a very a community that encouraged questions and inquiry and investigation and learning. And
Lutheranism can be that. It can certainly be that.
Well, I feel lucky in that. It's not a given, as we all know now. So one of the things that I had been and still wrestle with in relation to my Christian faith is how to reconcile the environmental condition of our world now and our responsibility or lack thereof with that business of God and the business of God becoming of earth, becoming on Christmas morning, right? A baby. So I get after that a bit in this book by asking what happens if we take Christianity at its word. What happens if we imagine Jesus, the Jesus of Christian theology, to be realized also in the non-human natural world around us? What if this incarnational business is in and of the world, the earth itself? Then what? And I ask that question through the church year. So one section in the book is on Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And,
Well, I mean, it's not... This isn't a new thing. I mean, pagans were doing it for centuries. They connected their gods with the earth. They celebrated earth things. I mean, it was festivals around changing of the seasons, and you know, and it was all about the gifts that the god that was related to the earth were giving the people. So it's not so far-fetched.
Yeah. Now, in the case of Christianity, there's been this tradition of distinguishing heaven from earth, for example.
Yes.
And earth being a kind of fallen matter. But that's not the only word that Christianity has. And as someone who has sort of wrestled with this, I describe myself as a lapsed churchgoer of a questionable Christianity. I nevertheless cannot seem to get rid of some of the intriguing possibilities in this Jesus event, in this Jesus thing, that allows for some real mystery and a kind of busting out of tradition to allow ideas of Jesus that go beyond some of the traditional.
Yeah.
So, to see that incarnation of God, in the case of Christianity, it's a redeeming incarnation of God. It's out of God's desire to connect with us.
Yes.
That Christianity says Jesus came to be. Mm-hmm. And so I ask after that in with the non-human natural world, could that be and means of God's being in the world to call us back to God? But then that supposes a certain responsibility on our part to be in relationship to that non-human natural world.
And to take care of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, yeah. That's but, I mean, the, what was it, the Gospel of St. Thomas, the one of the main reasons that it was barred by the Catholic Church was that in it, it said that you didn't need to go to church to find God. Split a piece of wood, I am there. Lift a rock, and you will find me. It, I mean, so these things have been inside Christianity,
yes.
And these thoughts have come through, because, I mean, St. Thomas, he was a priest. He was a Catholic priest, you know, so...
And some of the mystics, I think, have really identified with their experiences of the non-human natural world have felt like means of encountering God.
Yeah, I mean,
so you're right. It's not a radical notion. Yeah. So it's been fun to explore again through the church year, because each of the seasons of the church year is. Concerned with aspects of what makes Jesus God, divine incarnation
yes.
of God in the Christian faith.
Right.
And for those who don't know, outline the church here.
Well, it begins with Advent, which is the season just before the one we have begun today.
Mm-hmm.
So Advent is a preparation, if you will, and a waiting for the coming of the incarnation of God. And at the beginning of Advent, the question is whether that coming will be this baby Jesus, hands held open in sweet blessing, or the second coming, sword in mouth, iron rod wielding, Jesus taking names.
Yeah.
The second coming Jesus is also a possible encounter with Jesus that Advent allows for at its beginning. But now, on this day, on Christmas, we know for absolutely sure that the Jesus that Christians have been waiting for in the cycle of the church year is this baby. So if you, maybe you'd indulge me in reading a tiny bit from this new book.
Sure, let me do this. Let's take a moment for station identification and then come right back for the reading. And look at your clock, see how many minutes it is. That's how many minutes past the hour it is. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, on this Christmas and first day of Hanukkah morning. Happy holidays to all of you guys. We are here. If you're just joining us, then don't you have presents that you should be opening right now? What are you doing? What
Clinton,
are you doing?
It's just really, really come
thank
on,
you
man.
For joining us. And we are here with Kristen Swenson, who is about to read from her book where she talks about a potential ecology of Christianity. Kristen, if you would.
Thanks. So this is from a section on Christmas. The word nature comes from the Latin nasci, to be born. If there's something all newborns share, it is their sheer dependence. Good thing, then, that babies elicit delight, joy, tenderness, and adoration simply by being. And then I note a little bit about what a wonder it is that we become these sort of slaves, if you will, to babies. We will do anything, right? Mm. And they need us to be willing to do anything. We delight in their pleasure and sometimes simply gaze at them, adoring. Babies demand full attention and all our energy. We fetch them things, smile when they do, and weep with exhaustion at their impossible demands. We kiss their feet. Well played, God, to come to earth and be of earth, not as a gigantic dictator, not as a volcano, a great white whale, celebrity princess, or hurricane, but as a baby. Stroke of genius. On Christmas Day, we are invited to the humble place where God is new and needing. We are invited to practice thinking and caring for what is not me or even us, to rethink how we are in the world, how our doing affects the welfare of a world inhabited by God, who at this moment needs for us to pay attention, and out of that attention to create the conditions of health and security at the manger, which is everywhere, of course. There is joy in it and delight. Paying close attention, we see how a black swallowtail butterfly depends on the parsley, how bats undisturbed will clear a yard of mosquitoes, how trout spawn in fresh flowing rivers, the sweetness of a raspberry in season, and the satisfaction of walking to where one needs to go.
Wow, that's really nice.
That is very nice.
I have to say, the Christmas section was one of my favorites to write.
You can tell.
Well, I get the impression that this whole book was a bit of a joy for you to write. One of the things that strikes me just by talking to you and just by watching you talk about the book is how much this concept seems to fill you with wonder.
Wonder is a great word. Yeah. And an especially good word for this book because it's not an academic treatise. There's no systematic kind of point of logic. I'm not trying
to convince answer a question.
Exactly. Yeah. With if this, then that, therefore. But instead, a kind of invitation, an invitation of imagination. And with that, I hope an invitation to open oneself a bit and look at the world around us with a bit more wonder. And with that wonder, a sense of how then am I to be in relation to this world in order that all may be well.
Was it refreshing for you to write with the formal academic constraints taken off?
Yes, such fun. I have great respect for academics, for my colleagues in the academy who are doing exactly that rigorous work of intellectual inquiry. It's incredibly important. It's also been great fun. Although I maybe that's not maybe the best word. It's been a great privilege.
That's a word.
And a satisfaction.
It can be fun to do that.
Yeah.
Sure.
To indulge this question that has nagged at me a bit. And I can't say I have an answer either, but that in the process of working through this book, which I've seen now online described as an extended prose poem that makes a little bit more sense of the book as its style to me than, for instance, some kind of academic work.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you're a fan much of Annie Dillard.
Yes, and okay. Annie Dillard comes to play in this book. I bring lots of people into play.
Okay.
That was one of the fun things about this book, writing this book, was that it gave me an opportunity to go back and read, to re-encounter some of the writers and thinkers that I have so appreciated over the years. Annie Dillard is one, absolutely. Barbara Kingsolver, John Muir. I have a little bit of William Carlos Williams.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, there's some, so all sorts of folks get a word in here.
So this is your first work of fiction, right?
Of creative nonfiction.
Creative nonfiction. So are you going to do more?
Well, yes, I hope so. I love food, and I think food is a great hub of a number of things that I feel passionate about, from environmental issues to community to just the pleasure, the value of pleasure.
Although we were joking and bantering back and forth at the beginning of this interview, what we were joking about really underscores that. I mean, how much food sits at the center of many of our most sacred rites.
Yes,
and religion.
And I mean, as I said, that's holdover from pagans. Kwanzaa is entirely a celebration of harvest. It's all about the food.
Yeah.
So from the beginning of the world, that's what we've been centered and celebrating around is, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we have to eat.
How about that?
And isn't that great? And so to consider what the role of food is in how we interact with one another and the world around us,
mm-hmm.
is kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And it's that's great fun.
Yeah. I see a recipe book. That's what I see. She's going to do
a recipe for destruction from you. That's what she's saying.
She's going to do all her favorite recipes tied to all of her favorite religious experiences.
I like the way you think, Leslie. I like it.
Kristen, thank you so much for coming on our show and speaking with us. Can you let our audience know the title of your book and where they can get it?
Yes. The title is God of Earth, Discovering a Radically Ecological Christianity. And it's available wherever books are sold, as Yay. Far as I know.
Isn't it great to be able to say that?
Yes,
Barnes & Noble, Amazon, go get it.
Thank you so much. It's been great fun to visit with you.
Oh, fun for us, too.
Homegrown is brought to you by Blue Moon Diner. Blue Moon Diner, breakfast every day, all day, every day, with brunch on Saturdays and Sundays, and carefully constructed diner food in the afternoons and evenings. And speaking of evenings, Blue Moon Diner is great for supporting visiting and local artists for years. This week, on Wednesday, it's Jim Wave. And on Thursday, Fredericksburg's excellent singer-songwriter, Karen Jonas. Blue Moon Diner on West Main Street. Time for our next guest here on Homegrown. But first, we're going to have to welcome our guest co-host back on Homegrown, where he is more than welcome. Chris Bomer. How's it going, Chris?
Good, Clinton. Thank you. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you back. All right. Our next guest is a local musician. He's the front man for a band that we love so much. Yeah. Jesse Harper from Love Cannon. How's it going, Jesse?
Going good, Clinton. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to Homegrown.
Nice to be here, man.
So for people who don't know, and I can't imagine that there are people who don't know, but for people who don't know, tell them about Love Cannon.
Love Cannon is an acoustic band. Based here in Charlottesville, with the general organizing principle that we play 80s music on bluegrass instruments. It's funny, before I got here, I was trying to, people always ask me to explain what that is. We're children of the 80s, but we're also like serious musicians who play acoustic music, and we love those tunes, and we love, you know, breaking out some Bon Jovi or some Prince or whatever it is on banjos and fiddles and stuff.
Yeah, whose idea was this?
It was our collective bad idea. Adam Larrabee, the banjo player, and I were riding in my car from Boston to Virginia, and we had on an 80s radio station. And the cool thing about being acoustic musicians is you can have your instrument out in the car and entertain people while you're going down the road. So we were sitting, you know, cruising down 81, and Adam had a mandolin out, and we were learning the tunes and just having a blast in the car and, you know, laughing. By the time we got to Charlottesville, it was a Thursday night. By the time we got to Charlottesville, he and I had worked up an arrangement. And we went straight to John Dearth's Thursday night jazz show. And Adam was like, John, we're going to get up and play a tune. And so we got up and played Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Really?
At John's jazz Thursday
John's
night.
John's jazz show. Yeah.
And he was like, cool, man. Just, you know, John, he's like just always open for anybody to do anything musical.
And so did the rest of the band members, did you guys all know each other when you were playing bluegrass, or did some of the other band members come on after you guys?
No, what happened was Adam and I had Love Cannon as our silly thing. He lived in Boston.
Right.
And I lived down here. He was teaching at New England Conservatory. And
let's just sit with that for a moment. He was teaching at the New England Conservatory of Music.
Yeah.
Okay.
And now he heads the guitar department at JMU. So,
all right.
That's the other funny thing about Adam is like, oh, he plays the banjo. he plays the banjo so it can like slow him down enough so the rest of us can still play music with him because he's like, you know, the best jazz guitar player in the world.
See, well, that's the thing, because I know I know local musicians, and the two sides of what you were saying about being, you know, musicians and being you know, lovers of 80s music, those are both two strong sides, because every time I talk to local musicians about you guys, they're like, oh yeah, those guys are really great musicians.
And there are how many in the Love Cannon now? How many members?
Five, with kind of a rotating cast of fiddle players. We gotcha. We have just various people that'll go on the road. We're lucky. One of the things about being a musician, like in the craft, kind of making a life out of music, is that there's a huge tribe of musicians that you encounter throughout your life, and songs are the songs that we play. You know, it's just like, hey man, check out these set of chord changes. It doesn't have to be like, this is 80s music. So sometimes we'll get, you know, this Michael Cleveland is a fiddle player, bluegrass fiddle player, who's won the IBMA, International Bluegrass Music Association, Fiddle Player of the Year, like at least 10 times, maybe 15 times.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I can say, I'm, for anyone who's listening to this who hasn't actually heard you guys play, as you were joking about this, whose bad idea this was, is, well, when I heard the concept statement, you know, Love Cannon, they do bluegrass covers of 80s music, and I was like, what a horrible idea. And then I heard you guys play, and you're fabulous.
Well, that's the best part about it, is it's so, you know, I know that it was a bad idea. We knew that it was a joke.
Yeah. And well, you guys cover some great songs, but you also cover some songs that I pretty much hate the originals, but I actually like your versions.
That's my favorite thing to hear is like, oh, I hate this song, but I love the way you guys do it.
See, here's the thing. When I was, when it was the 80s and I was listening to this stuff, I remember, and maybe it was just the age that I was at, but I remember being very down on music.
Oh, totally.
It was like, oh my gosh, music today just sucks. And it's like, you know, maybe, you know, the Police, the Talking Head, but yeah, most of the stuff today is just, and I think a lot of what I was reacting to was coming from the 70s.
Oh yeah.
I really missed the warmness of music then. And the birth of synthesizers and electric drums,
right.
Things just felt very cold to me. And so it seems like what you guys have done is really, I mean, these days I look back at 80s music with a lot more, I hope not with sentimentality, but with a lot more respect and a lot more tolerance, because there's some really nice melodies going on there. But you guys have just really cured that whole coldness.
Man, I totally agree with you. When I listen to 70s music, you hear the bands play.
Yes.
You hear the, you know, the harmony singing, all that kind of stuff that was happening then. And then you get into the 80s, and sometimes it's even the same guys you were listening to in the 70s and what happened to them with the filter of the 80s on it. So drum machines started happening more, synths started happening more. There was this production that, you know, MTV happened.
Right.
And everybody had to be like, it's not just the song, it's like this video. And the video killed the radio star, you know what I mean?
Right.
What happens when you distill it down to just the songs, you realize that the songs exist apart from the recordings of those songs. And they really exist apart from the decade and the circumstances that they came from. These people, Don Henley is a songwriter, and songs, you know, you can sit down at a piano or you can sit down with a guitar and you can sing Boys of Summer and have a very satisfying experience and check out the tune and check out the melody in the same way you can sit down and take a, you know, something from Porgy and Bess and play through it, you know, Summertime, or you can take something from any of the, like the Great American Songbook and have a satisfying experience playing that music without having a big band behind you to make it sound like the recording.
Right. So, yeah, so I wonder if we're actually taking a step backwards in time, and I wonder what you think about this, because in terms of, at least from my understanding, in terms of the history of American pop music, you know, coming into the 40s, it was about the song. And the person that you thought of was the songwriter, right? That was the star. Hoagy Carmichael writes a really good song, and then right. everybody records that song because the
Johnny
thing...
Mercer.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's, oh, it's the next song from this person. Irving Berlin writes a song, and everybody does that song, and then you get Frank Sinatra. And Frank Sinatra, I think of as the first big pop star. And suddenly, it's marketing around this performer, and songs become the product of this particular performer.
Right. It became about the song. Well, you know, previously there was like the piano roll that you would get, or you would get the sheet music. People used to buy the sheet music. That's how we accessed a song. Hey, man, let's all sit around the old piano and check out this new tune. It's like you had to be the vehicle for the expression of the song.
Exactly.
Then it became the recording. It's like now the recording is how we experience it. But the recording got held up as this, the definitive version of the tune. Now it's Frank's voice, or it's, you know, whoever it could be, you know.
Right, a song becomes Ella's song, or Frank's song, or the next decade, Elvis's song.
Exactly. Right. And so then you have the artifact of the recording, people like kind of celebrating that. Well, it changed. It's changed again. I mean, we've had that go around now. One of the ways that we feel like we're getting back to, it's almost like the sheet music version.
Uh-huh.
Where you had like a special arranger, like here's the melody and the chord changes. Now you arrange the song, and here's, you know, some big band that's just going to come, you know, Duke Ellington or somebody else that's going to give you this version of a song in a different way than you'd heard it before.
Do you think that there is an essential aspect to a song, is a song much, much more fluid than we're used to thinking of it as?
Well, I think of songs as, I love performances. I love specific performances. I love mm-hmm. Elvis. I love, you know, Michael Jackson. I love all those, and the older performers, that whole spec, anything good, I'm going to love it. But songs are vehicles for musicians to give you their craft.
Oh, I like that.
That's why, and a lot of people, this is a conversation and kind of a wider conversation about what is a cover song? What is a cover band?
Let's have that conversation. This is the show for that conversation.
But, you know, is the London Philharmonic a cover band?
Oh, okay, that's the sound of my mind just blowing. Okay.
Right. You know, because people are going to play these tunes. They have a composer and they're going to play the composition. Well, Miles Davis did a lot of cover tunes. Is he in a cover band? Is he a cover musician? He was doing, what he does is not, when you think of a song that he's playing over, him playing Porgy and Bess or something, it's his interpretation that we value. And there used to be this separation between the song and the musician, like you were saying. It used to be, hey, Hoagy Carmichael did this. And now we celebrated the musician. Well, the musician had to be now the writer, the person who performed it, the person who recorded it, the face of whatever, you know, the video, the persona, the character. And that's how we ended up with Britney Spears, who also does some cool stuff, but that's how we ended up with some of these things that we consider to be, you know, less than fulfilling experiences of the music that we, when we say that, the music these days, that's something that we all say, you know, because we feel like it every time it comes out, every time it gets a little more commercialized, a little of the sustenance is gone.
Right.
You know, it's like going to get a meal at a fast food restaurant. You're like, is this really even food anymore? Or is it just a scientific thing that's supposed to taste like something that I'm chewing? Yeah. You know, and that's what has happened with a lot of the music. But there's also this opportunity to say there are real musicians everywhere who are capable of playing any song in a satisfying way.
Right. And you guys right now, are you on tour?
We are not on tour at the moment. The way that we tour is a little, like, we don't leave town and stay gone for a year.
Right.
Like some other bands, we leave town and stay gone for 5 days. Yeah. And then we come home because we are mostly teachers and family people, and that's what we do. So,
but you've got a show coming up here.
Here in town, hometown show, yes. And we're bringing some touring musicians to us to share the night. Some of our favorite musicians who I think live in Nashville now, the Stray Birds.
Oh.
So give us the details once this show is soon.
New Year's Eve.
So you're doing a New Year's Eve show at the Jefferson, right?
Yep, at the Jefferson.
That promises, I mean, doesn't that promise to be a pretty rockin' affair? Because I imagine that different performances have got different energies to it. The energy to a New Year's Eve show. Have you done a New Year's Eve show before?
We have. We did a New Year's at the Jefferson a couple of years ago.
What's the energy like at a New Year's Eve show?
I think there's, you know, everybody, New Year's Eve is the night of the year where it's okay to party. It's okay to, like, you know, even nice. More so than, like, Friday's the end of the work week. You know, everybody looks forward to, thank God it's Friday. We get into that mode. Okay. New Year's Eve is the ultimate Friday, even though it doesn't fall on a Friday. Does it fall on a Friday this year?
Saturday.
That's Saturday.
It's Saturday.
Okay. Well, it's the end of the work week for the whole year where you get to be like, yeah, and everybody knows it and everybody's getting ready for it. So that anticipation of a party, you know, we're feeling it. And so we're going to prepare some, you know, extra special stuff for the night. We're feeling like, all right, we got to do something.
After midnight, are you going to bust into a cover of 1999? should I even ask?
We might. There will be a couple of, you know, this was a tough year for music.
It was.
Wow, yeah.
That is an understatement.
Yeah, and so I think, and a tough year for musicians that we really love. And so there's, we will acknowledge that musically. I know that.
So we're at 45, 46 minutes after the hour, something like that, and you're sitting here listening to Homegrown, show about local art on your Christmas morning. Merry Christmas to you. If you're just joining us, then, hey, you're sitting listening to Homegrown, your show about local art. We're talking with Jesse Harper, guitarist from Love Cannon, and having a great conversation here. You mind if I play a little something from... You guys, you guys brought some tunes.
Yeah, I'd love it.
Want to set this up?
This is from a new record that we've been making called Love Cannon and Friends. It's a version of Paul Simon's Graceland, and it features Aoife O'Donovan, formerly of the band Crooked Still, and Michael Cleveland, bluegrass fiddle player. Who's played pretty much with everybody. I think his band is Flame Keeper.
And the other members of your band who you play with regularly are, and what are they playing?
Adam Larrabee on the banjo, right. Andy Thacker on the mandolin, Daryl Muller on the bass, and Jay Starling on the dobro.
Gotcha.
All right. This is Love Cannon on Homegrown, your show about local art. Thank you.
child on my first wedding. Whatever reasons to believe, we both will be receiving grace. She comes back to tell me she's gone.
Classical music that right. is played on the mandolin. Or you don't think, when I say banjo, you don't think African music. which is where the banjo came from. You think banjo and bluegrass, right. And that kind of defines what that is. For us, when we arrange a song, we may learn three or four songs to every one song we put in a set, because sometimes there are tunes we've been trying to have a Hall & Oates tune for a long time. We tried a bunch of different ones, and it was just like, man, I don't know if it's just that those guys are such good singers, I can't pull it off, or like what it is, you know. But, you know, sometimes something just doesn't work. Sometimes you're like, God, I want to play Thriller. Right? And Thriller just, you get into it and you're like, what is it? I love the song. I love how it sounds. But when we tried to play it, it just can't, it fell flat. So there was something about it dynamically, the way that the arrangement went, that just didn't work, you know. But we won't stop trying to play Thriller. It's just that it, you know, we have
Rich
found
Girl that. For that matter.
Oh, Rich Girl, man. God, such a killing tune.
Well, Jesse, thank you so much for coming on Homegrown. If you could once again give the what, where, and when for your New Year's Eve show.
New Year's Eve, the Jefferson. I think it's a Saturday night. I don't know. The 31st. I know that much.
Party like you're waiting for 2016 to finally come to an end. All right. Thanks a lot, Jesse.
Thanks for having me.
And now it's time for Leslie's weekly rant.
I never took much stock in magic beyond the magic of creation that I do normally. On a stage, directing a show, making music with friends, or sitting and crafting a storyline full of complicated characters is the only magic I rely on. It's real to me because I have a hand in creating it. I have a piece of it. And I could join with others or create it all my own. It was safe. And while that may seem odd to those of you who aren't artists, trust me when I tell you that knowing how the donuts get made and making them yourself is completely different. See, when you get to make them yourself, you become a part of something bigger than you. You get to put your own spin on something that has been done for centuries by people just like you. It's artisan, and it's the reason that most of us continue to do what we do for very little or no pay, and definitely little reward. Just ask the thousands of artists passed up for paying jobs, the hundreds that don't get nominated for awards, the millions of us that are toiling as we speak to entertain and delight you every day without even getting paid. The only explanation for doing what we do is love. Or, to use another term, magic. This week, I'm on vacation with my family for Christmas. And I found another meaning for magic. We are spending the entire week at Disney in Orlando. For those of you who know me, you know that I am a skeptic when it comes to things like this. I had never been to Disney World. I went to Epcot when I was 8, the first year it opened, basically when it stunk. The man in my life found out I had never been and insisted that we go. And this turned into a family vacation. So, we have been here for 4 days now. I am a convert. This really is the most magical place on earth. This really is the place where we can all become kids again. Every single day has been magical. I started off just wanting to see it all because I had heard so much about it, but never seen it for myself. By the end of the first day at Magic Kingdom, my heart was a little lighter, having gotten to take pictures with characters that have been part of my life and my children's lives since they were little. I found myself talking to Tigger and Pooh as if they were real. I got hit on by Chip and Dale, Those are some frisky chipmunks. Even Goofy kissed my hand and hugged me a little too long. Disney is an altered reality. A reality of love and light. A reality that can take the most hardened cynic and turn them into a joyful optimist. If only for a short time. And I began to think about art, and more specifically, the art I create. Disney knows what they're doing. They've done it successfully for decades. What can I take from here? What can I learn from them that I can institute in my own small world to help convert others? Then I realized that that's something all of us need to ask. We all need to ask ourselves how we can translate our love and our need for art into the magic that an audience member simply can't live without. So, as the year comes to a close, after having lost so many wonderful artists in 2016, I think the thing we need to do is not just recommit, but re-engage our art. We need to look at the art we do and make sure it's purposeful. We need to make sure it's engaging. We need to make sure it serves not just the audience in front of us, but the world at large. When you think about it, some of the most beloved artists we lost this year did the same thing with their career. Leonard Nimoy and Prince, just to name two. Especially with the challenges we have facing us in the next 4 years, it is all the more important that we stand up, make our voices heard, create art that educates, enlightens, and entertains. We also need to make sure we hold each other accountable if we don't uphold these standards. We need to be open to this type of criticism. We need to accept it when someone tells us that what we're doing needs depth or thought. Because there is no time to create art without thought now. We have always been the voices to the voiceless. We must continue that. And the way we create our particular brand of magic is the key.
That's Homegrown for this week. We'd like to thank our guest, Dr. Kristen Swenson, author of God of Earth, Discovering Radical Ecological Christianity. Check that out where you can buy books. And Jesse Harper from Love Cannon. Check out their concert on December 31st, New Year's Eve, at least Georgian calendar New Year's Eve, at the Jefferson Theater. Thanks a lot. See you next week.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.